Yeah, yeah, the reply came. Two doors slammed in quick succession, and the truck rolled forward. Clinging to the roof, I rode from the blackness of the garage into the thin yellow light outside. Chapter 46. The truck picked up speed as we left the prison compound. It roared through a couple of turns, passing through the two-story brick buildings lining Main Street. Soon we were racing along a plowed road through the deserted and snow-smothered landscape outside of Anamosa. I figured we were going more or less south. The wind sliced viciously at my face, and I pulled my ski mask down over my eyes and mouth. I watched as the collapsed strip mall and abandoned fast food restaurants outside Anamosa disappeared behind us. Then we passed an abandoned propane distributor, the tanks painted like giant ears of corn. I drew the knife from my belt and stabbed it into the canvas below me. The wind roared so loudly that I couldn't hear the noise of the canvas ripping. "Darla," I hissed urgently through the slit in the canvas. "I'm here. Make some noise. Try to get the driver to stop." "What? Who? Just do it. Yell, bang on the cab, whatever." I removed my face from the slit in the canvas and crawled forward until I could see the top of the cab. I clung to the edge of the roof, poised, ready to attack when the truck stopped. I heard some thumps below me, and then Darla started to yell something. But her voice was barely loud enough to hear over the wind. I couldn't even make out the words. "Come on, Darla," I thought. "I know you've got better pipes than that. You never had any trouble making yourself heard over the noise of the grain grinder when you thought I wasn't pedaling fast enough." The monotone moaning resumed. The moans were louder now. They threatened to drown out Darla's feeble shouts. A series of thuds and thumps started a counterpoint, as if someone were beating their fists and feet against the bed of the truck. The guy's voice broke, and the moaning was replaced by a frenzied falsetto screaming. It was almost unbelievable that such a hulking guy could make noises like those. It sounded like a little girl throwing a full-throated temper tantrum. "That should work," I thought. It sounded like he was having a seizure. They'd have to stop and check on him. But the truck didn't stop. The screaming fit went on and on. I heard a snatch of laughter coming from the cab. If anything, we were speeding up. The two guys riding in the cab obviously didn't care if one of their passengers was freaking out in the back. I slumped to my belly on the roof of the truck, trying to figure out what to do. The noises from beneath me were just annoying now. It sounded more like an uncontrolled fit than an attempt to get the guard's attention. I had to stop the truck. If I waited until we reached our destination, there were sure to be more than two guards to deal with. I could try crawling onto the roof of the cab. There were two antennae there that would make decent handholds, if I could make it to them without sliding off. And even if I did make it, then what? Try to kick in the windshield? Maybe I could throw something from my pack. I had the extra ammunition from my lost guns. Could I get it to fire by heating it or something? Make the guards think they were being shot at? Would that make them stop or drive faster? Perhaps I could soak my extra t-shirt in lamp oil, tie it around a fistful of bullets, and light it? Lamp oil! That was it! The primitive oil was thick, completely opaque. I inched back to the slit in the canvas. "Darla!" I yelled. "Can you give me a hand?" No response. Maybe she couldn't hear me over the continued screams of the man-child with her. I twisted my arms out of the straps of my backpack and unbuckled the hip belt. I took a firm grip on one of the straps and rolled over on my back. The truck bounced and my heart lurched. For a moment, I thought I was going to be bucked off. When my heart slowed a little, I scooted back, dragging my pack with me until I could jam one leg through the slit in the canvas roof. I got my leg in up to the knee and wedged my other foot against the curved rib supporting the canvas roof. I slowly sat up. The wind ripped at my back, gusting so hard it lifted my butt off the roof now and then. I dragged my backpack onto my lap, where it was protected from the lash of the wind, and rummaged through it for the supplies I needed. I had emptied more than half a dozen water bottles of various sizes in the 2 days since I'd left Worthington. The first bottles I found all had regular plastic caps. I pushed those aside, digging deeper. One of the empties got pushed out of the top of my pack, where the wind caught it. I grabbed for it, but the wind whipped it away. It spun drunkenly in the airy backwash of the truck and was gone. Finally, I found what I wanted, an Aquafina bottle with a sports cap, the kind you pop open with your teeth, squeezing liquid into your mouth. I unscrewed the cap and shoved it into my pocket, safe from the tearing wind. The bottle of oil was all the way at the bottom of my pack, of course. I hadn't used my lamp or lamp oil in days. The risk of someone seeing the light had been too great. I finally dug it out. It was a plastic half-gallon bottle that probably once held milk. The oil inside was polluted and black. Perfect. I unscrewed the cap from the jug of oil and stowed that in another pocket. Then I lifted the jug and tried to pour oil into the Aquafina bottle. The truck jostled and my hands slipped. Oil went everywhere, coating my gloves. The wind whipped the oil away from my face, but it splattered all over my legs, backpack, and the roof of the truck. I jammed the Aquafina bottle between my legs and cupped one hand around its neck. I upended the jug, using my hand to form a pipe connecting the two bottles. Oil splashed out, running through my hand, but some of it was flowing into the bottle. By the time I finished, more than half the oil was gone, and my glove and crotch were soaked, but I had a full squeeze bottle of oil. My left glove was slick. I wiped it off as best I could on the leg of my coverall, reaching below the knee to find a patch of cloth not already soaked in oil. I capped the bottle in the jug and stowed the half-empty jug in my backpack. Putting a backpack on while racing along in a 50-plus mile-per-hour wind wasn't particularly easy, but I got it done. Clutching the squeeze bottle, I crawled back to the front of the truck. The truck was approaching a broad S-curve in the highway. A farmstead was nestled on the inside of the curve. I could see two large concrete silos protruding above the massive snow berm that lined the road. It seemed like as good a place as any to try my crazy plan. I clamped my left hand around the last bow supporting the front of the canvas roof, holding on in a death grip. The top of the bottle resisted my attempt to open it with one oily glove, so I pulled it open with my teeth, wincing at the acrid chemical taste. I thrust my right arm forward and squeezed on the bottle, aiming for the windshield. A thin stream of oil flowed out about 2 feet, was caught by the wind, and flung back into my face. I ducked and squeezed my eyes shut, sputtering, and almost dropped the sports bottle. I rubbed my sleeve against my eyes and mouth, trying to clean them, but all I really accomplished was smearing the oil around. My eyes burned and my mouth tasted like the floor of a quick lube joint. Oil was splattered across the top of the truck's hood, but none had reached my target, the front windshield. I needed to either get closer or apply more force to the bottle. Plenty of oil remained. I'd only squirted out an inch or so. Crawling across the gap between the canvas roof of the load bed and the metal roof of the cab didn't seem like a good idea. I inched forward anyway, until my head and shoulders were hanging over the gap. When I stretched out my arms now, they were above the cab, but if we hit a bump, I'd go flying. I clasped both hands around the Aquafina bottle, lacing my fingers together. Then I squeezed, groaning with the effort. Oil shot out, coating the roof of the cab. I adjusted my aim. Now the stream arced down onto the windshield. I waved the bottle around like a fire hose, still squeezing with all my might. The truck's windshield wiper squeaked, and its brakes squealed. It fishtailed sideways, tires grinding over the icy road. We slammed into the mountain of snow alongside the road, and I was hurled into the air. Chapter 47. The world spun around me, a jumble of yellow-gray sky, snow, and forest-green truck. Something slammed into my right shoulder, and I rolled down an icy hill. I plowed into fresh powder at the bottom, winding up splayed out and buried, with snow packed into my mouth and nose. I rolled over, spat snow from my mouth, checked my shoulder. It felt like I'd slammed it in a car door 6 or 8 times, but I could move it, so I figured it wasn't broken or dislocated. I felt a trickle of warm blood seeping along my arm. I must have split open my gunshot wound. The twin grain silos towered over me. Beside them slumped a burnt-out farmhouse and mostly collapsed barn. I couldn't see the Peckerwoods truck. The snow berm alongside the highway was in the way. A long, chaotic trail left by my thrashing limbs marked where I'd rolled down the side of the berm. It seemed far too quiet for the aftermath of a crash. Shouldn't someone be screaming? I tried to stand, but dizziness forced me back to my hands and knees. I slowly crawled up the snow berm without using my bruised arm. The truck had plowed into the berm and twisted so its back end was blocking the road. Its front wheels were stuck in the snow, raised 3 or 4 feet above the roadbed, so the entire truck was stuck at an angle. The front windshield was full of cracks, and a chunk about the size of a man's head had been punched out of the passenger side. The windshield wipers had smeared the oil around, leaving long, half-moon streaks on what was left of the glass. I crawled over the crest of the berm and slid down the far side. I grabbed the passenger door handle to pull myself upright, looked through the window, and recoiled in shock. One of the guards was slumped against the passenger window, face pressed to the glass. Blood poured from his hairline, ran in rivers along his nose, sheeted over his sightless eyes, and dripped into his yawning mouth. I took hold of the handle again, turned it. The door opened easily. The guy fell out headfirst. The top of his skull was flattened and bloody. Behind him, the driver held a pistol aimed at my head. Chapter 48. The pistol wavered, dipping and bobbing as the driver struggled to hold it steady. His other hand was formed into a claw, clutching the center of his chest. His face twisted in agony. He squeezed the trigger. The shot whanged off the door trim a foot from my head. I dropped flat under his line of fire. If I crawled away from the truck, he might be able to get an angle on me. The blood-soaked face of the dead guard was inches from mine, contorted by a zombie grin. I had to move. I wormed around the guard's corpse and under the truck. Its front wheels had been lifted partly onto the snow berm by the crash, so I could rise to a high crawl, although my pack bumped against the undercarriage. Now what? If the driver got out and poked his gun under the truck, I'd be as easy to kill as a pig in a slaughterhouse chute. I scuttled to the far side of the truck, under the driver's door. I glanced around. The driver's legs weren't visible. Either he was still in the cab, or he was standing beside the tires. I took a deep breath, trying to still my shaking arms. My hands were icy despite my gloves, either from the chill of the frozen road or fear, maybe both. I eased my head out from under the truck, hoping the last thing I saw wouldn't be the barrel of a pistol. No flash or sudden retort of gunfire met me. Everything was silent, in limbo. I rolled out from under the truck and crouched to look into the cab. The driver was facing away from me. He had scooted across the bench seat to the passenger side. I turned and ran toward the back of the truck, avoiding the snow berm at the front. As I sprinted past the tailgate, I looked for Darla. I figured she'd be out by now, but the back flap of the truck was still tied shut. I couldn't see or hear her. I skidded to a stop at the corner of the truck and peeked around. The driver's hand and gun protruded from the open passenger door, wavering above the guard's corpse. I broke into a flat-out sprint toward the door. The driver was slowly emerging from the passenger door. He got his entire right arm and head out of the door. He looked over his shoulder, saw me, and started to bring his pistol around to shoot me. I jumped, launching myself into a flying front kick when I was still 2 steps away. My kick connected with his forearm, slamming it against the open passenger door with a sickening crunch. The pistol dropped from his suddenly limp hand. I fell, landing splayed across the corpse. When I looked up, the driver was clutching his right arm. Either he'd magically grown a bonus elbow, or I'd broken his forearm. I grabbed his pistol and stood. The driver had a hunting knife in a sheath on his belt. He didn't react when I took it from him. His breath rasped in his chest, and he was too busy hunching over in extreme pain. I glanced into the cab of the truck. A shotgun lay on the floorboards, so I picked that up too. "Darla!" I yelled. "I could use some help out here." "What's going on out there?" Her voice was faint, muffled by the canvas. What did she think was going on? "Nothing much. I crashed the truck, subdued the guards, and got their weapons." "Is it safe?" That seemed like an even stranger question for her to ask. When had it ever been safe? Not since we had met. Not since the volcano had erupted. What was going on with her? "Yeah," I said anyway. "Coming." I kept my eyes fixed on the driver. I needn't have bothered. His eyes were closed, and he rocked slightly back and forth, totally absorbed in his agony. "What the hell is going on out here?" I looked to my left at the girl who had just stepped out from behind the truck. She wasn't Darla. Chapter 49. All the oxygen left my lungs, replaced by disbelief and pain. Like I'd taken a kick to the groin. "Who are you?" "I'm Alyssa. I have no idea who this Darla you keep talking about is," she said. "I thought you were Darla." She was the right height. Brown hair curled around her shoulders, exactly like Darla's. But Darla had a rectangular Midwestern face, beautiful but tough and solid. This girl was elfin by contrast, her face almost diamond-shaped, her features delicate, her tiny nose slightly upturned. I guessed she might be a year or two younger than Darla. "Who's Darla?" She hadn't moved from the back of the truck. "Where's Darla?" I strode down the length of the truck toward her. "How am I supposed to know? I just told you I don't know who she is." "She's a girl. Your height, same hair. Peckerwoods took her to Anamosa."
"Shot in the right shoulder?"
"Yes, that's her. Where is she?"
"Clevis?"
Her face twisted with rage, and she pointed behind me. I spun. The driver had emerged from the truck and was scuttling down the road, hunched over and clutching his broken arm to his chest. As I stared, the girl grabbed the shotgun from under my arm. I turned back toward her, afraid she might try to shoot me, but she'd aimed it down the road at the driver. She tried to pull the trigger over and over again, but the gun was safetied.
"What's wrong with this thing?" she screeched,
turning back toward me and leveling the barrel at my chest.
"Whoa!"
I swept the barrel aside with an inner forearm block, wincing from the pain the move triggered in my shoulder.
"Don't point that thing at me. You need to push the safety off. It's the button on the right side," I said automatically, instantly regretting my big mouth.
Gunning down the driver as he fled seemed wrong, although letting him fetch his buddies in Anamosa wasn't such a bright idea either. And what if Alyssa decided to use the shotgun on me? She snicked off the safety and pulled the trigger. Her shot was high and wide, and she hadn't braced herself at all. The shotgun knocked her on her ass.
"Piece of shit!" she screamed and threw the shotgun aside.
"Waste of a good shell," I said wryly. She sprang back to her feet and reached for the knife on my belt. I caught her wrist as her fingers wrapped over the hilt.
"What are you doing?" I yelled.
"Let go!" she screamed back. The driver had picked up his pace and was more than 100 feet down the road now. "What are you going to do with my knife?" I asked again.
"Fine," she said. "You win."
She released her grip on the knife hilt, and I turned and crouched to retrieve the shotgun. Something tugged at my waist, and I spun back just in time to see Alyssa running down the road toward the driver, with my knife raised above her head, ready to stab. She'd only taken a few steps when an eerie, monotone moan emanated from the truck's load bed. She took one more step forward, then looked back, clearly undecided. Finally, she pivoted and marched back to me.
"Now look what you've done. You've upset Ben."
"What are you talking about?" She pointed the knife at me, waving it as she spoke.
"Do not mess with my brother."
"Who do you think I am, other than the guy who just rescued both of you? Give me my knife back, please." She thrust the knife into her belt and turned away, marching toward the truck bed. I looked down the road at the driver for a while. He was already out of the shotgun's range, but I wanted to make sure he didn't double back. I didn't relax until he was a solid quarter mile down the road. I turned my attention to the corpse of the truck's passenger. A ring of keys dangled limply from his belt. I took the keys and started searching his pockets. As I searched, the moaning coming from inside the truck ended. I put the pistol in my belt, stowed the shotgun in the passenger side footwell, and trudged to the back of the truck. I pulled aside the canvas flap. Alyssa was crouched in the back of the truck beside the big guy I'd last seen in the Anamosa garage. They sat on a jumbled pile of wooden crates. She had a glove balled up in one hand, and she was rubbing the guy's back with it, running it repeatedly over his coat. He was blocky, but his flesh appeared to be hung on an oversized skeleton, like he hadn't eaten well recently. He looked maybe 19 or 20 years old. I let down the tailgate and climbed into the load bed. "Is he okay?" Alyssa looked at me over her shoulder. She didn't stop brushing the guy's back.
"He'll be okay."
"You didn't get hurt during the crash?"
"Ben and I were thrown against the canvas wall with the crates," she said. "I've got some ugly bruises."
"What about you?" I asked, addressing Ben. He was huge. Sitting with his ankles tucked under him, he was almost as tall as I was standing. He was shackled prison style, wrists and ankles cuffed and linked with chains that severely restricted his movement. He didn't respond. He was gently rocking forward and back, back and forward.
"Doesn't he talk?"
I stretched, trying to work out the painful kinks in my side and shoulder.
"When he wants to.
Why are you rubbing his back?"
"I'm brushing, not rubbing. It helps."
"Why'd you crash the truck?" "I thought you were Darla. She fell onto a Peckerwood truck during an ambush. I've been trying to find her."
"You've seen her? Did you talk to her?"
"No, I never talked to her. The only time I saw her, she was asleep. They had her in the infirmary at Anamosa. She didn't look like she was hurt too bad."
"What'll they do to her?"
The girl shook her head slowly.
"They won't flens her, probably. They're running out of girls, and we're valuable. I think they only decided to trade me away because I come with an extra mouth to feed."
She glanced at Ben.
"I've got to get back to Anamosa. They'll kill you."
"Maybe. What do you want to do? If you stay here, the Peckerwoods might come back and pick you up."
"No."
She grabbed my arm and stared at me. A fierce light burned in her eyes.
"Get us out of here. Anywhere. I don't care. Worthington, if they're still holding out."
"I can't waste that much time. I've got to find Darla. And if you don't want to wait for the Peckerwoods, we've got to get out of here."
"Why didn't you shoot Clevis? It might have been a couple of days before the Peckerwoods sent out anyone to check on him."
My face grew hot. I don't know. I couldn't.
"He would have shot you without a second thought,
or done something even worse."
"I'm not like him."
The girl shook her head.
"What planet are you from? And what's your name, anyway?"
"Alex." I wasn't sure what to say to the first question. I reached out to Ben, intending to check the lock on his wrist. The girl caught my hand and held it.
"What?"
I asked.
"Don't. He doesn't like to be touched."
"You're touching him."
"Brushing, I told you.
I was just going to check the locks on his cuffs. I might have the key." I dangled the key ring I'd snatched from the corpse. She took the ring from me and used a tiny silver key to unlock Ben's ankle and wrist cuffs. Then she tossed the chains away.
"Thanks," she said, handing the keys back to me.
"Why doesn't he talk?"
"Like I said, he doesn't want to. If he decides to talk to you, you won't be able to shut him up. What's wrong with him? Nothing! Sorry, look, we need to get out of here before Clevis gets back to the prison and sends the cavalry. We can loop around, drop me near Anamosa, and then you can take the truck wherever you want to go. I started shuffling toward the tailgate. My body had stiffened as we talked. Even walking hurt now.
You should have shot him.
Alyssa followed me, Ben trailing behind. He might not make it to Anamosa, I said as I climbed down from the tailgate. I think he broke some ribs in the crash, and I shattered his right arm pretty good.
You did that?
Alyssa hurried to get alongside me as I limped toward the driver's door. Yeah, he was trying to shoot me, remember? She said, looking thoughtful. I pulled open the driver's door, threw my pack on the bench seat, and climbed in after it. I don't know if I can drive this thing. I've never driven anything but an automatic.
Me neither.
I dug a spare shirt out of my pack and handed it to Alyssa. Clean off the front windshield, would you?
Sure.
She took my shirt, climbed onto the front fender, and started wiping the oil off the windshield. I took the keys out of my pocket and looked for the ignition. I couldn't find it. There was no keyhole anywhere.
Won't it start?
Alyssa asked when she finished the windshield.
I don't know, I said, staring at the gear shift. The gears aren't even marked on here, and there's no place to put a key.
If Darla were in the driver's seat, we'd have been rolling down the road at top speed by now. The dashboard was confusing, covered in labels, symbols, signs, dials, and gauges. After a moment, a handle to the left of the steering wheel caught my eye. It was labeled off and ignition. I turned it, and the truck started making a low whine, but it didn't start.
What's that? Alyssa said.
I don't know.
It doesn't sound good. Turn it off.
I cranked the handle back to off, and the whine died.
Let Ben look at it. He's into military stuff.
Alyssa stepped off the running board and held the door open for Ben.
What do you know about this truck? Alyssa asked him.
It's an M35A2, Ben replied. His voice was deep, which surprised me after his high-pitched moaning. But it still sounded odd, flat. A multi-fuel model. That means you can drive it on gasoline, diesel, vegetable oil, heating oil, or jet.
Focus, Ben, Alyssa interrupted. I don't need to know everything about it. How do you start it?
Turn on the ignition. Ben pointed at the same handle I'd turned. Then push the starter button. He leaned into the cab, pointing at a button I'd missed to the right of the steering wheel. I cranked the ignition handle over, starting to whine again. Then I mashed the starter button under my thumb. The truck roared to life. Ben clapped his hands over his ears and stepped down from the running board. I jammed the clutch to the floor under my left foot and fiddled with the shifter. I wasn't sure if it was in gear, or if so, which gear it was in. There were no markings on the shifter. I started to ease up on the clutch, but realized I'd forgotten to buckle up. I pulled over the lap belt and buckled it. I eased back on the clutch. My face felt hot, and I realized I was holding my breath. When my foot came clear off the clutch, nothing changed.
I think it's still in neutral, Alyssa said.
Yeah. I grabbed the gear shift and shoved it upward. The truck made a horrible metallic grinding sound.
You've got to push the clutch in first, I muttered to myself.
I tried again, but the truck must have been in third. It lurched forward, buried its front wheels even deeper in the snowbank, and stalled. The new guy should use the chart to the left of the steering wheel, Ben yelled.
Chart? I said.
Then I noticed it, exactly where Ben said it would be. It showed all the gear positions. Despite the chart, I stalled the truck twice more before I found reverse. And even then, the truck didn't pull free of the snowbank. The back wheels spun on the icy road, spitting snow and digging in a little. Ben showed me how to engage the all-wheel drive, but even that didn't help. The deuce was stuck. And thanks to my infinite genius, we had a limited amount of time to get it unstuck before Clevis returned, with all his buddies. Chapter 50. Ben wandered around the truck,
muttering. "What?" I asked. He didn't reply for a moment.
Was that intended to be a question?
"Yes," I said. "What are you muttering about?"
"This truck has been badly maintained. There is no winch. The tires show excessive wear."
A lot of help that was.
Alyssa and I traded places. As she got into the cab, she shuddered, staring at the blood smeared over the passenger side windshield and dash. I walked to the front of the truck and wedged myself against the bumper to push. The mountain of snow behind me reached up above the cab of the truck. I heaved on the bumper with all my might while Alyssa spun the wheels. Nothing. I remembered how Darla had rocked the bulldozer free of the creek last year and tried pushing rhythmically to set up a rocking motion. That didn't work either. Now Ben was standing partway up the snow berm, a little ways off, watching the proceedings.
"I could use a little help down here, you know," I yelled at him.
He turned his back on me and started trudging toward the top of the snow berm.
"Where are you going?" I shouted.
He didn't reply. Great. We didn't have time to mess around. By truck, we were less than 15 minutes from Anamosa. I wanted to be long gone before Clevis got back to the prison and informed the Peckerwoods that I'd stolen their truck. Alyssa shut off the engine and climbed out of the cab. I chased after Ben, moving as quickly as I could on the slippery berm. I caught up with him just as he started down the far side of the berm, heading toward the crushed barn. Alyssa was nowhere in sight.
"What are you doing?" I asked.
"I need a lever," he replied.
"What for?"
I asked, but he talked over my question, ignoring it. "Like Archimedes' lever, but it does not have to be that strong. I do not need to move the world, I only need to move a truck."
"Hey, that's a good," I started, but Ben kept talking over me.
"Archimedes was killed by a Roman soldier. General Marcellus had ordered that Archimedes not be harmed, but Archimedes refused to accompany the soldier. He was working on a mathematical problem involving seven circles. His last words were, 'Do not disturb my circles.' Then the Roman soldier killed Archimedes with his sword."
"That's int."
"The lever-action rifle was invented in 1849 by Walter Hunt. The first important model was the Spencer repeating rifle. It had a 7-shot magazine capacity. It was used during the U.S. Civil War by Union forces only after Abraham Lincoln test-fired one in 1863. But it was too late for the rifle to make a significant difference in the war." By this time, we had reached the remnants of the crushed barn. Ben started rummaging through the rafters while he lectured me. I helped him shift the rubble, having some idea what he was looking for. "The principle of the lever allowed E.M. Dark to invent a compact can opener used by American troops during World War II. The first military model was called the P-38, developed in 1942. Not long after, an additional model named the P-51 was introduced. Some people believe the can openers were named after the aircraft that share the same designation, but that is a coincidence. The can openers were named for their size. The P-38 was 38 millimeters in length, and the P-51 was 51 millimeters in length." We'd found a suitable board, a broken 2x8. It was 14 or 15 feet long. Ben pried scraps of roof decking off of it while he talked. He made it seem effortless. Clearly, he was as strong as his size suggested. Alyssa huffed up and more or less pushed her way between us.
"What's wrong with him?" I whispered.
"Nothing," she hissed back.
"Why is he going on and on about levers?"
He'd continued talking. Now he was giving a long dissertation on the importance of levers to the landing gear and ailerons on F-14 fighter jets. I was pretty much tuning him out.
"It's a special interest. Not levers, I mean. Anything to do with the military."
"So he's one of those, what do you call him? Idiot savants?"
"He's not an idiot," she whispered. "He's smarter than you are, or me. And he's the kindest, most gentle, the best big brother anyone could have. Don't hurt, just get us somewhere safe, please."
"I've got to get to Anamosa, but I'll give you the truck and all the supplies I can spare."
"You didn't answer my question, though. What's he got?"
"Dad called it autism spectrum disorder," she whispered. "Mom said it was a special blessing, not a disorder. I used to think she was crazy, before.
when Mom and Dad were still alive. We had the 2x8 stripped of all the excess chunks of wood now. There were still about a zillion nails in it, but I didn't think they'd get in our way. I picked up one end of the rafter, and Ben grabbed the other. He was still talking. Now it was something about the use of levers in airplane launch and retrieval systems aboard aircraft carriers. We trudged back toward the truck. Alyssa walked beside me. "He wasn't this bad before the volcano," she whispered. "Stress makes it harder for him to cope. And there's been tons." "Yeah." I was quiet for a minute, paying attention to where I placed my feet as we crossed the snow berm. "How did you survive with the Peckerwoods?" Alyssa looked away. "I did what I had to keep us both safe." How could this slight girl protect her overgrown big brother? It should have been the other way around. I didn't want to think too hard about it. When we got back to the truck, Alyssa left me to get into the driver's seat. Ben fed one end of the rafter under the front bumper of the truck and joined me at the other. It would have been easier if we could have used the snow berm as a fulcrum, but it was too tall. Ben kept talking about aircraft carriers. He didn't seem to care or even realize that I wasn't listening. Alyssa fired up the truck. The wheels spun in reverse. Ben and I pushed up on the rafter, trying to use the lever to force the truck up and off the snow berm. We moved the truck an inch, then two. The board bowed as we heaved upward on it. Suddenly, the rafter snapped. The truck rocked back into place, and Ben and I fell, sliding down the snow berm and coming to rest against the front bumper. The rafter was broken in a jagged line right where it had pushed against the bumper. "I should have placed the lever vertically," Ben said. "Yeah," I replied. "It probably would have been stronger that way." We tried using the longer of the two remaining pieces of rafter, but we couldn't get enough leverage to budge the truck at all. So we trudged back to the wrecked barn. We'd taken the easiest rafter the first time. It took 20 or 30 minutes to free another one of the right length and size from the tangled wreckage. I was starting to worry about how long we'd been there. Clevis had long since disappeared over the horizon. Ben placed the rafter under the bumper, oriented correctly this time, and Alyssa got back in place behind the wheel. As soon as we pushed up on the rafter, we could feel the truck rolling backward. We started rocking it rhythmically. I slid up so my shoulder was jammed under the rafter and I could use my legs to lift it. Ben and I heaved upward, Alyssa gunned the engine, and suddenly the truck was free. Ben and I fell forward, sliding down the snow berm again. The truck shot across the road, struck the snow berm on the opposite side, and stalled. I sprinted across the road. "Don't get it stuck again," I yelled. "I wasn't trying to," Alyssa retorted. "I know, but let me drive, okay?" "Gladly, stupid truck." Alyssa unbuckled her seatbelt and scooted to the middle of the bench seat, straddling the gear shift. Ben got in the passenger side, smearing the blood on the seat into his pants. I passed him my backpack to stow under the passenger seat. A bulging day pack already rested under there, but I didn't want to spend time investigating it at that moment. When I got in, Ben was pulling out the seatbelt on his side. It stretched across both his lap and Alyssa's. I fastened my own seatbelt. Ben put the shotgun in his lap with the barrel pointed toward the passenger door. He bent over it, minutely inspecting some aspect of its workings. "Will he be okay with that?" I asked Alyssa. What I really needed to know was whether he was likely to accidentally shoot me. "Safer than you or me. Knows so much about firearms that he used to get email from adult collectors who read his blog. Before." "How many shells we got?" I said to Ben. "This is a Remington 870 pump-action shotgun. It is the most popular shotgun ever made. Law enforcement and military all over the world use this gun." Ben tried to pump the shotgun, but the slide wouldn't operate. "It is loaded." "So how many shots are in it?" I asked as I started the truck. Ben clicked a lever on the side of the gun and started pumping the slide. Chunk, 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 chunk. Each time he pumped the gun, a shell flew out, landing in the footwell. "None," Ben said when he finished. None? Those shells are duds?
No. There are no shells in the shotgun now. There were five.
I wanted to throttle him despite the fact that he was roughly twice my size. Well, reload it, would you?
Yes, I would. Ben started picking shells off the floorboard. You want to test fire one out the window? I forced the shifter left and down for first gear, lifted off the clutch, and promptly stalled the truck again. Ben ignored my question, continuing to reload the shotgun.
He doesn't shoot guns, Alyssa said while I restarted the truck. We took him to a rifle range for his 10th birthday. He was already into all things military then. He fired a 22, put it down, and left the range. He doesn't like the noise.
That's, different. I stalled the truck once more before I got it in first. Then I pulled out too fast and nearly ran over the corpse we'd left lying in the road. At last we were rolling down the road away from Anamosa. South, I thought. We'd made it away before Clevis could send a search party from the prison. Though if the pecker would send anyone after us, it would be more like a search and destroy party. Ben put the shotgun back in the footwell. He rolled down his window and peered out, twisting his head to look behind us.
Is that shotgun safetied? I asked.
Ben didn't say anything. I glanced at Alyssa.
How should I know? She said.
Find out, would you? I tried to shift into second gear and stalled the truck again.
God, don't cuss around Ben, Alyssa interrupted. He doesn't like it.
She turned back toward Ben while I restarted the truck.
You remember your social interaction class, Ben?
He didn't respond.
What are you supposed to do when somebody asks you a question?
I am supposed to choose an appropriate response.
And what did Alex just ask you?
Alex asked me whether I safetied the Remington 870 shotgun. I always check the safety before I handle any weapon. I always check the safety when I set a weapon down or pass it to someone else. I never disengage a weapon safety.
That's good.
I'd gotten the truck restarted, even managed to put it into second gear. Ben was hanging his head out the window.
Would you close the window, please? I asked. I'm cold.
Ben pulled his head in and started rolling up his window. The deuce and a half behind us is an A3, remanufactured under the extended service program between 1994 and 1999.
Wait, you mean our deuce and a half, right?
No. The truck in which I am riding is an A2 with the multi-fuel feature and a manual transmission. I cranked my window down and adjusted the mirror. A truck was racing toward us, gaining far too fast. Chapter 51.
There's a truck behind us, I yelled.
I told you about the truck, Ben said.
Is it the Peckerwoods?
Alyssa asked, craning her neck.
Who else could it be? I said. You should have killed Clevis.
She was probably right. I just grunted. The truck was whining loudly. I had crushed the pedal to the floor, but we weren't going very fast. I pushed in the clutch and tried to shift to third. My hands shook from the adrenaline, and I wasn't used to the shifter. I stalled the truck.
What'd you do that for? Alyssa yelled. I was trying to go faster, I said, frantically groping at the starter button.
Ben started a monotone moan. He was curled over, hugging his knees and rocking gently back and forth. Just as I got the truck restarted, there was a colossal crash as our pursuers rammed us. I was thrown against the wheel. The truck lurched forward, and at the same moment I threw it into gear and jammed my foot down on the accelerator. Alyssa started screaming, a high-pitched screech that was in no way helpful to our predicament. Ben's moan grew in volume until they were making a cacophonous tenor-soprano duet. I glanced in the mirror just in time to brace myself as the deuce slammed into our rear end again. Instead of falling back to ram us again, they started to come around. I swerved, temporarily blocking them. But I couldn't block them forever, and I couldn't outrun them. I wasn't a good enough driver. They were like a cat playing with a particularly inept mouse. Unless something changed, things didn't look good for the mouse.
"Give me the shotgun!" I shouted.
Alyssa kept screaming, her hands up around her ears.
I couldn't see the truck in my mirrors, and the passenger side mirror wasn't adjusted right. I figured it must be on our right. I cranked the wheel over hard and heard a satisfying crunch. But seconds later, they reappeared in my left-hand mirror, still coming on strong.
"Give me the shotgun," I repeated.
Alyssa didn't respond. In desperation, I reached out and slapped her, hoping to shock her out of her hysteria. It was an awkward, backhanded slap since she was sitting right next to me and my right arm was stiff from the crash. I'd never laid a hand on a girl before. Then again, I'd never been in a race to escape cannibals before either. The truck was almost alongside us now.
"Shotgun!"
I yelled. Alyssa reached into the passenger footwell, pulled the shotgun out from under Ben's feet, and passed it to me. My hand had left a pink imprint on her cheek.
"Take the wheel!" I shouted.
Alyssa gave me a blank look, so I grabbed her left hand and put it on the wheel. I flicked off the shotgun safety and twisted to aim out my open window. I was too short. My foot came off the gas pedal and our truck slowed. I squeezed the trigger as the Peckerwoods truck rocketed past us. The shotgun boomed, kicking me backward, completely missing the tire I'd been aiming at. On the plus side, the guy shooting his pistol at me from the other truck missed just as badly. My shoulder burned like it had just been kicked by a billy goat. I could barely move my right arm. We were rolling ever slower, and the Peckerwoods truck was at least 100 feet ahead of us. I transferred the shotgun to my left shoulder, holding it awkwardly, and leaned out the window. Would a shotgun even work at this range? I wasn't sure. I lined it up on the back of the truck and squeezed the trigger left-handed. The kick knocked the shotgun right out of my hand. It clanged against the running board and fell to the icy road. I swiveled my head just in time to see it disappear behind us.
"Crap!"
I yelled. The Peckerwoods truck had come to a halt ahead of us. They were turning around, but the space between the snow berms was far too narrow for a U-turn. Instead, they'd started a laborious 3 or 4 point turn. Instantly, I knew what to do. I dropped back into the driver's seat and mashed the gas pedal under my boot.
"Brace yourselves!"
I yelled as I took the wheel from Alyssa. I lined us up on the center of the Peckerwoods truck. Not that we could miss. They almost filled the road. It looked like I might be able to broadside them perfectly as they worked through their turn. It was just like a physics problem I'd had in high school. When two objects collide, the one going slower absorbs most of the acceleration and gets damaged the worst. I kept the pedal mashed to the floor. The guy in the passenger seat of the Peckerwoods truck had his pistol out, firing at me as we approached. I ducked under the dashboard. I couldn't see a thing, but all I had to do was keep our truck straight. I heard the pop-pop of his pistol twice more, and then there was a tremendous crash. Chapter 52. I was thrown against the steering wheel, but the lap belt kept me from flying farther. Our truck was at a dead stop. I slowly leaned back. The Peckerwoods truck was about 40 feet ahead of us, upside down across the road. It was wrecked. The cover over the load bed was crushed so that the truck was tilted, its nose thrust into the air. Every window had shattered and the doors hung open. I couldn't see any movement inside. Alyssa and Ben were curled over and squeezed together by their shared seat belt.
"Are you okay?" I asked.
Alyssa sat back. Ben's eyes were glassed over. He looked dazed. A cut on his forehead was bleeding heavily. A trickle of blood snaked into the corner of his eye. He blinked twice and started screaming, howling, really, in a way I hadn't heard since kindergarten.
"Is he really hurt that bad?"
I reached toward Ben. Alyssa batted my hand away.
"I got it. You touch him, you'll just make it worse."
She turned back to Ben, talking to him in a calm, firm voice.
"Ben, let me check your cut. I can fix it."
She was bent low but not facing him, sort of talking in his ear. She pulled off one of her gloves, balled it up, and started brushing it down his arm. He kept screaming. I saw movement in the Peckerwoods truck. The driver was hanging upside down by his seatbelt. He slid out of the belt and started dragging himself through the door. He was bleeding and didn't appear to be armed, but I didn't want to hang around and find out for sure. I mashed in the clutch and pushed the starter button. The truck chugged for a moment and then roared to life. My right arm had frozen up. I had to reach across my lap with the left arm to operate the gear shift. I was shaking so badly that I wasn't sure I could do it at all. Somehow I managed it without stalling the truck. Maybe I was getting better at driving. Ben was still screaming, and Alyssa was still brushing him. "You have any bandages?" Alyssa asked. "There's a first aid kit in my backpack," I said. She quit brushing Ben and pulled my backpack out from under the seat. The Peckerwoods driver was now clear of their truck. I eased my foot onto the gas, and we rolled slowly forward. It didn't look like our truck would fit around the wreck, but I didn't want to turn around. For one thing, I was afraid more trucks might be headed our way from Anamosa. And for another, I didn't know if I could manage a three-point turn. "Watch out," I said to Alyssa, who was still rummaging through my backpack. "I found it." She twisted and sat, clutching the plastic case that held my first aid supplies. Ben was still screaming. I mashed the accelerator, racing toward the tiny gap between the wreck and the snow berm. The driver looked up in alarm and scrambled away on all fours. We struck the edge of the cab, barely registering the impact. The wrecked truck spun when we hit it, and we shot free, accelerating south, away from the accident and the Peckerwoods. Chapter 53. Within minutes, Ben had quieted down considerably. Alyssa had a gauze pad in one hand, mopping his forehead. With the other, she was brushing him continuously with her glove. She talked to him in a patient, straightforward voice. "It's okay. I'm going to put everything back the way it should be. You're going to be fine." "Ben's blood belongs on the inside," he said. "Yes, it does. I'm going to wrap your head up now, to keep it there." Alyssa had wiped away enough blood to expose a long cut along his forehead. She started bandaging it, using strips of medical tape to hold the wound closed and covering all of it with gauze. We came to an intersection, and I turned left. I planned to drive east a ways and then turn north, looping back to Anamosa by a different route. Once I got close, I'd head back to the prison on foot and give the truck to Alyssa and Ben. They could find their own way to Worthington. I had to keep searching for Darla. I squeezed the steering wheel tighter, wondering if Worthington was still even standing. Maybe Alyssa and Ben would arrive to find a town burned out and looted by the Peckerwoods. The truck was handling badly, pulling to the left. Or maybe I was doing it, trying to drive one-handed. I wasn't much of a driver even when both my arms worked. The pull got steadily worse. The truck started listing to the left and making a rhythmic whap, whap, whap sound. "Something's wrong," I said. "I've got to stop." "Okay." Alyssa didn't even look at me. "Does it hurt anywhere else?" she asked Ben. "Ankle," he said. "How did you hurt your ankle?" "It got twisted in the straps of the backpack when we crashed," Ben said. "I need to check it for you." Alyssa ducked down into the passenger side footwell. I let the truck coast to a stop and got out. The front left wheel well was crushed. Its edge had carved a deep groove in the tire, shredding it. Now it looked like the whole tread might fall off. The spare was obvious. It was attached horizontally just behind the driver's door. I'd clung to a spare tire on a deuce like this one during my wild ride from Cascade to Anamosa. What I didn't see was a jack. I'd never changed a tire before, but I'd watched my mom do it once. She'd gotten a little plastic case that held the jack out from under the spare. I looked all around the spare, even wormed under the truck on my back, but I didn't see anything that looked like a jack. I went to look in the cab. Ben was stretched out on the bench seat. Alyssa bent over his left ankle. "How is he?" I asked. "His ankle is hurt. It's swelling, and I'm afraid if I take his boot off, he won't be able to get it back on." "Don't, then. We might have to walk. and we're still way too close to the wreck. I don't know if he can walk.
Wrap his ankle and foot in an ace bandage. Over the boot. Try to immobilize it.
Okay. Ben, do you know how to change the tire on this thing?
Which thing does Alex mean?
The truck we're sitting in.
Yes, the operator must loosen each lug nut from the damaged wheel, but not remove them. Then the operator must use the hydraulic jack to raise...
That's what I want to know. Where's the jack?
In the toolbox.
Where's that?
Ben swung his legs off the seat and started to slide out of the truck. Both Alyssa and I protested, telling him not to move, but neither of us was in a position to stop him. When his feet hit the road, he screamed and crumpled to the ice. I ran around the cab, ignoring the pain of my bruised right leg, but by the time I got there, Alyssa was already helping him up. Or rather, he was helping himself up, using Alyssa's shoulder for support. She barely touched him.
Ben's ankle is not functioning properly, he said.
No, it's not, Alyssa replied. Lie down on the seat and I'll wrap it up for you. Where's the toolbox? I asked.
Under the operator's door, Ben replied, as Alyssa helped him back into the cab.
I went around to the driver's side. There was a metal compartment that I hadn't noticed before between the running board and the door. I twisted the handle and opened the toolbox. It was freaking empty.
Chapter 54.
There's no jack, I told Alyssa. We have to walk. Ben can't walk, she whispered. I'd sort of known that already, but we had to get away from here somehow. Maybe I could rig some kind of stretcher using the frame from my backpack and drag Ben along, but he was a big guy. The engine was still running. I'd seen people driving along the shoulder of the interstate on flat tires before. They never went very fast, and Mom said it was a bad idea, but I couldn't remember why. Whatever. If it worked at all, it would beat trying to drag a gigantic teenager down the road. The passenger door was still open. Alyssa and Ben were busy wrapping his leg, so I limped around the cab and slammed their door myself. I only stalled the truck once before getting it in gear. It would move on a flat tire, but not fast. The speedometer never passed 10 miles an hour. Still, it was far better time than we would have made walking. I had to fight to keep the steering wheel straight, which was tiring using only one hand. The truck moved like it wanted to crash into the left-hand snow berm. After a while, keeping it on the road became a real test of my endurance and willpower. At the first intersection, I turned right. I wanted to put several turns between us and the Peckerwoods to make us harder to follow. I planned to loop back to Anamosa and find a way to get inside the prison to look for Darla. A couple of miles down the new road, I spotted a narrow, plowed crossroad. When I let go of the wheel, the truck turned left all on its own, a brief moment of respite for my aching arm. The numbness in my right arm started to wear off. Not a good thing. It was replaced with what felt like a zillion angry bees swarming under my skin, stinging and chewing my muscles to hamburger. And to top it all off, I was exhausted. I tapped my left foot, bit my lip, and suppressed a few dozen yawns, all in a monumental struggle to stay awake. "I can't do this much longer," I said. "I'll watch for a place to stop," Alyssa said. "I've got to get back to Anamosa. You drive for a while." "I've got to take care of Ben." She turned away from me and resumed brushing Ben and talking to him in a low voice. She'd already wrapped his ankle. It seemed to me that he'd be fine on his own for a while. The first farmstead we passed was a burnt-out husk. Few of the walls were standing, let alone any part of the roof that could shelter or hide us. A few minutes after we passed it, I heard a faint clang in the distance, like a bell ringing, but I couldn't figure out where the sound had come from. The second place we found was different. The driveway wasn't plowed, but the snow had been deliberately packed down. I couldn't make out any footprints or tell what had packed the snow. There were no tire or snowmobile tracks. It was a typical Iowa farm. 2-story, white-clabbered house, red barn, three corrugated steel grain silos, and a big metal garage that had been crushed by ash, snow, or both.
"Stop here?" Alyssa asked. "We should keep going."
"Ben needs rest. You do too."
"I don't like it. Looks